about to get underway. So good afternoon, everybody. Trust you enjoyed the keynote this morning. We're just running a little bit late because obviously the keynote ran over time, but there's some fantastic content that we got to see this morning. So my name is Jaron Burbage. I'm a Principal Solution Specialist here at Microsoft on the Azure platform, and I'm joined here with Diogo.
G'day.
Who's a Cloud Solution Architect at Microsoft as well. And together we're sort of taking you through sort of another overview of the Azure platform about how we're looking at ways that these technology can be used to really transform your business. So some of the things we'll be talking about in the next hour or so is just some of the new trends that are coming through, similar to what we heard this morning in the keynote, and then touching on sort of four pillars of the Azure platform that really helps you to embrace this transformation and deliver big transformational outcomes for your organizations as well. So it is a kind of scooting across the top level of Azure itself, weaving in a few demos that Diogo will be doing for us today, and then near the end I'll sort of highlight some of the other sessions that have been run later in the week that you may want to go to learn more about in a more focused manner. So when we think about digital transformation technology, it's really become quite omnipresent today, and it's really shaping the way that companies innovate and engage with their customers moving forward as well. And we're seeing this has been quite important to organisations, and the way that they're starting to deal with that is in the four ways you see on the screen here. First is around how we engage with our customers, trying to bring a single view of our customer together. So we're bringing data in from multiple different disparate data sources that we may have around how we interact with our customers, and really providing that in a better way so we can do more things like targeted advertising, targeted loyalty, that sort of stuff towards our customers, be more relevant to our customers, which is really important today. Secondly, thinking about how we start to transform our products, how we start to do things better in a more agile manner. Think about how we start to optimise operations and get supply chain efficiency and those sort of things better. And then thirdly, around how we start to empower our employees, putting more data in front of our own employees so they can make better decisions faster in a more agile manner. So these are kind of the four pillars around where we see digital transformation taking place today, and it's really becoming very, very important moving forward as well. So if we start to look at the next few years ahead of us, there's some big, big things starting to impact on this. You know, by about 2020, we expect around 1 million devices an hour to be coming online through growth of sort of IoT solutions and that sort of thing. And they could be kind of be creating far more core relationships between people and the devices and the relationships we have around data that's been generated from that as well. When you sort of look at by 2020, around the average age of an S&P 500 or corporation will be only 12 years old. Whereas if we look back in 1960, that age was about 60 years old. You know, so some big changes coming to those organisations. And then finally, we see about 60% of all computing is going to be in the public cloud by 2025, as we start to move towards sort of this everything as a service model from a compute perspective as well. So in this talk today, we're going to be talking through kind of four things, how it relates to these transformational things that are starting to appear on the horizon, and then we start to get organisations ready to embrace this. So the four parts we'll talk about is around application innovation. So how can you start using cloud to innovate faster and better than what you do perhaps today? I'll be talking about data and intelligence and the way that you can start to really power decisions with far more insight into the data that you have inside the organisation today. I'll talk about the openness and flexibility of the Azure platform. So what are we doing to enable you to build freely and deploy anywhere you like on any tool of choice, with it, regardless of your flavour that you like. And then finally, talk about the trust aspect of things and what we're doing as an organisation to protect our customers. As customers start to rely more and more on our platform to operate, you need to be really safe in the knowledge that organisation has got your back in a way. And so I'll be talking about what we're doing around the protection of your business on their platform. So starting with application innovation, so there's sort of three areas that we want to sort of touch on in this piece here. The first bit is about how you start to build apps faster and easier. With a lot of the cloud technologies we have available today. We'll touch on how you then start to be able to manage those applications in a much better way to get better insight. And then thirdly, we'll talk about the big change around mobile and what that means in the mobile experience moving forward. So the Azure platform is a number of things. At a base level, it provides infrastructure service capabilities. And this is what most organisations are quite comfortable with and familiar with today. Essentially, it's compute, network, and storage as a service in the cloud. And there's been a significant amount of investments that we've been making in this over the last few years. Every talk I've come back in over the years on the Azure platform, this thing just keeps growing and growing and growing. So now there's a smorgasbord of different VM types that you can run today. right through to the G5, which is their 32-core half a terabyte VM. So literally, if you're doing things like lift and shift and that sort of stuff, there's really no VM that we can't run on the public cloud. So it's great for production workloads, but also the ability to spin up environments as you need to from the development experience, as we saw with the DevTest Labs demo this morning, makes it really, really easy as well. Some performance storage capabilities we have and that sort of thing. But really, when you start moving above the infrastructure service layer into platform as a service, that's where the real agility of cloud really comes into it. The ability for me to build fast, deploy easily, without having to worry about running infrastructure. So these services that we run as platform as a service are underpinned by our infrastructure service platform, but it makes it really, really easy for you to sort of build the next generation web mobile applications, leveraging the existing frameworks that you already have today, and start looking at some high-scale agility and that sort of thing. We're also starting to build out some pre-packaged solutions as well. So the Internet of Things is another fantastic opportunity that's in front of us at the moment. We're starting to see some really interesting projects that even here in New Zealand are starting to light up about how we use that. But, you know, often it's been kind of hard to try and build these solutions. There's a number of disparate components you need to bring together to make it work, and it just wasn't really easy to get sort of quick time to value to experiment and try something new. So we have the Internet, Azure Internet of Things suite is basically a suite of product that you can deploy and quickly get quick time to value to try out Internet of Things solutions and that sort of stuff. So these are things that you can deploy out of the Azure platform itself. And then to expand on what we do ourselves, we've got the Azure Marketplace. This is an ever-expanding marketplace of solutions that ourselves and third-party organisations are building that enable you to get really quick time to value of deploying things on the Azure platform. So these can be through full ISV solutions, through to disparate things like Docker containers and Linux VMs and those sort of things. But this marketplace is expanding greatly all the time, and it gives you a great opportunity to just try out something quickly and easily. And within the marketplace portal, you can deploy directly into the Azure environment as well, so it makes it really easy for you to get hold of some of those new solutions. So once we started building applications, running them on the cloud, the next big thing is about how we start to manage these and monitor them in a proactive manner. So there's a number of ways that we can do that. One is within the Azure portal itself. So there's a number of dashboards that you can build using the Azure portal itself to give you insight into the performance and operation of the applications that you may be running. And these can be all fully customized as you see fit. But I think the real power of some of the monitoring that we're providing is application insights. What this does is gives you full telemetry of the performance of your web-based application. So you can see where any issues are in the performance of that application, probably before the users start reporting on it. When you do start seeing issues within that application, it will give you code trace to tell you exactly whereabouts that issue is happening, and it can actually integrate with Visual Studio to give you that full DevOps lifecycle in terms of understanding where an issue's gone, what I need to fix it, create that fix, deploy it back into production, and carry on again. So if you haven't checked out application insights, I suggest you really do. It's a really great great solution we've got there to give you full telemetry of the performance of your application. And then finally, we've got Operations Management Suite. So on the operations side, how do we start getting a holistic view of what we have deployed across our private cloud and our public cloud solutions as well? So Operations Management Suite is now providing almost a single dashboard, and we're sort of finally starting to get to that single pane of glass view that we've always been looking for from an ops perspective. Doesn't really matter where I run my application, if I'm running it on-prem, on Azure, on AWS, on OpenStack, it doesn't really matter anymore. We have the full ability to basically monitor your workloads no matter where they are across those different cloud environments. So we heard earlier from Donovan about the mobile application experience and that sort of stuff. Mobile's becoming really, really important to us now. It's the way we're really starting to engage more with our customers. It's how we're operating as employees on the road. So building up a fantastic mobile experience is really key moving forward. And so there's been a lot of investments that we've been making to help with that. And a few of these things are what Donovan spoke about this morning with the Xamarin acquisition. You know, that's just amazing tech we've got available now where we can build our application. It doesn't matter what phone or device we want to target that application to. I can code once, deploy anywhere I like. The Hockey app beta deployment is another great tool that gives us real-time feedback of the performance of our applications in the field with our beta users, giving us full telemetry in real-time of what's going on, how users are interacting with those products, and then what I can do to try and fix it before we push production workloads out as well. And then the Xamarin Test Cloud, and what that means about being able to target your app onto any device and see how it's going to run before it gets deployed out to the users, so that when the users start interfacing with the application, they're getting a first-class experience out of the gate. So coupled with that is in the back-end services that we run on Azure to support that, and that's the Azure mobile services, which gives you the ability to do things like offline data sync, push notifications, user authentication, and that sort of thing. So if you are using the Xamarin Hockey app, sort of Xamarin Test Cloud type deployment area for your mobile app, it's great to partner with that. But also, if you are using other tools, it's completely tool agnostic. So whatever your development tool of choice is for your mobile experience, you can leverage the Azure mobile services in the back end to help deploy and manage that application as well. So this afternoon at 4:15 over in Crown Plaza, Trustpower is doing a session. So what they're doing is talking about the changes they've had in terms of how they started to do modern application development using our cloud services. So if you don't have a spot on your calendar this afternoon at 4:15, then Stephen and his team are doing a session over at Crown Plaza talking through a real-world example of how Kiwi companies achieve some great agility through leveraging the PaaS services to do the next generation of application development. So with that, I'd like to hand over to Diego, and I'll get him to take through a couple of demos talking through some of the things we've just spoken about just now.
Thanks, Sharon. Good afternoon, everybody. This is typically where we show you the deployment of a VM in Azure through the portal. Now, I'm going to assume most people know how to do that. So today, we want to show you something a little unique, something a little bit different. Over the years, Microsoft has improved the deployment experience in Azure, things such as improvement in speed, improvement in security. We've also done things such as provided you multiple tools to do your deployment with, so you can use things like Visual Studio, PowerShell, Azure CLI, et cetera, et cetera. We've also addressed standardization, so the ability to repeat your deployment over and over again through JSON or ARM templates. So we've done a lot of good stuff there. Now, I've got a quick question. I'm curious to know how many people in the audience actually use a Mac or Linux as a workstation for the day-to-day job? So there's a few. Okay, fantastic. So what I'm going to show you today, true to our commitment around multi-platform and open source, I'm going to show you how to use PowerShell on Ubuntu to deploy a VM in Azure. Fantastic. So the first thing I want to show you is I've got my resource group up in Azure. Okay, so this resource group can use things like RBAC to lock it down, and it's a resource group I could probably give to a developer or my team to populate with VMs for their project. At the moment, all I've got in there is a storage account, as you can see. The next thing I'm going to bring up is my Ubuntu desktop. It's running 16.04. This is my Unity desktop here. So I'm going to open up a terminal session. Now, can you see this? Yeah, okay, fantastic. First thing I'm going to do is obviously something you shouldn't really do, but elevate my credentials. So to get started, you need to head over to the PowerShell GitHub repo. I've got a link up there. It's GitHub PowerShell. And here you find all the documentation, all the source code, all the packages you need to get PowerShell onto your machine of choice. If I go down here, I can see that I've got a few packages to choose from. Obviously, I'm interested in this Ubuntu package over here, so I've actually created a tiny URL to download this. So I'd simply use wgettinyurl.com. That's going to download my package for me. Now, obviously, not knowing what the internet connection was going to be like, I've downloaded it already. The next thing we do is install that package. Away we go. Pretty straightforward so far. And then we simply type in PowerShell. Now, as soon as I type in PowerShell, I'm in my native PowerShell environment. So anything that I would do on a Windows machine in PowerShell, I can do on my Ubuntu desktop. So for example, I can list all my commands. They will come up. So in order to actually do things with Azure, I need to install the Azure commandlets. You would normally use install package and import package to do that. I've written a PowerShell script to do that for me to save a bit of time. So import Azure. Away we go. So now if I type in get command, where name, like Azure. You can see I've imported all my Azure commandlets. So far, so good. Now, the next thing we need to do is we talked about standardization and deploying from templates. So typically, we see a lot of organizations adopting GitHub and storing their ARM templates on top of GitHub. And I could do the same thing here. I could use a wget and literally pull down my templates from a source-controlled repo. I've already done that, so I don't need to do that either. Get template. And this is actually downloading templates from a storage blob that I've created previously. So the final thing is, I've got PowerShell installed, I've got my Azure commandlets installed, I've downloaded my JSON templates. The next thing to do is deploy. Now, all that's running behind here is the new Azure RM resource group deployment commandlet, and I'm piping in the Azure template. So just give the VM a name. Password's password. That didn't work. Let's try again. Ah, I've forgotten a very critical step, logging into Azure. This is good. So, to log into Azure through PowerShell, we need to do a couple of things which are slightly different to how we would do it on a Windows box. Using the login Azure RM commandlet, you're going to get some feedback from the tool, which points you to a URL that you need to head to and input a code. Now, the fantastic thing about this is if you use 2FA, we respect 2FA. So let's head over. To this link. Jaron, how was your weekend?
It was good, mate. Faster than this.
Let's just try this again with another. Here we go. The next thing I need to do is provide this code that I've been given. Just paste it in. Now it's asking me whether I'm allowing the authorization of PowerShell into my tenant. Now the cool thing here is, as I mentioned, we respect 2FA. So I'm going to be prompted for my password and then prompted to put in my PIN. Okay, here we go. So I'm just waiting for my authenticator app to come up. Here we go. Just typing in my PIN. There we go. Now, hopefully, we'll see this come up and say we're authenticated. And if we go back to our shell, give it a couple of seconds. There you go. So we're now in the tenant. Now, hopefully, if we hit deploy, here we go. So you can see it's going through, checking the contents of the template, and hopefully, you can see it's created some resources already. If we head back to my browser and refresh There you go. Fantastic. You can now deploy your VMs on Ubuntu like you could on Windows. So we'll let that go through. See how that's going. And we'll come back to that a bit later if we've got some time. So the next thing I want to show you is how we deploy applications on PaaS. So if you want to provide additional value, if you want to move up the value chain in your business, you need to look at deploying applications on the PaaS platform over VM if possible. And the reason for that is we start taking care of things such as the underlying infrastructure. It's truly elastic, and we allow you to focus on being productive, building your application. Now, if no one's, or if there's people here who haven't actually played with our PaaS platform, Azure App Service is our platform as a service offering, and there's a great way to get started. So if you head over to tryappservice.azure.com, you can get a foray into what it's like to deploy an application on Azure using the PaaS platform. And you can see how quickly and easily it is to do something like this. So I head over to this site. I'm presented with an option of templates. So think of a template as the ability to pre-provision certain elements I need for my application. So for example, if I wanted to build a mobile app on Azure with Azure App Service, I could click the mobile app template and Azure will automatically provision the backend code I need plus the client code that I need to make my mobile device connect. If I wanted to build an API app, same thing. Azure will provision all the things I need in order to publish a secure API out to the internet. In this case, I'm just going to build a web app just to show this. So I click on the web app template. I hit next. I'll just build this coffee shop application. Just need to log in with my Microsoft account, and this is available for everybody, by the way. So here we go. Now that I've logged in, what it's doing in the background, it's orchestrating the deployment of this website, this application for me. And hopefully, there you go, within 60 seconds, I've got a fully functional app sitting up there in the cloud. And I can do things such as edit my code. And you know, when you're building a web app, you can integrate this with repos such as GitHub to give you continuous integration and deployment. In this case, I'm just jumping onto Visual Studio. And you see that I can literally dive in to this application that's running live. I'll show you the application first. This is my coffee app. I buy a cappuccino for $3.45. It's a pretty good price. As an example, you can see here, got my About Coffee Shop label. I can go in here and just edit this live. And that pretty much gets saved. If I refresh this, there you go. Simple as that, okay? So what does the deployment experience look like in the Azure portal? So very quickly, I'll show you that as well, and you can see our VM is pretty much nearly done there. So to deploy an application or web app on Azure is pretty straightforward. Again, I hope most people have opened up the portal and see this. Just go to the category, web mobile. You can see here we've introduced a new type of web app. So this is literally a web app deployment on Linux using things such as Node.js. I would go ahead there and type in the name of the application, resource group, et cetera, et cetera. So I've done that already with another application. You can see here also that I've got all the same templates I showed you on the Try App Service website. So that's all there. So I've built my own application, my own mobile app, and put it into a resource group. And for people that don't know, a resource group is effectively a container that holds all the components that make up my application. And then I can do things such as tie RBAC around it for security. I can also bubble up costs. I can do tagging, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see in this mobile app, I've got multiple components. I've got traffic manager load balancing my inbound connections. I've got an SQL database. I've got a storage account. I've got a web app, et cetera, et cetera. So the cool thing here is, as I mentioned, I can apply RBAC to this if I wanted to. Pretty straightforward process. Literally hit this node here, and I would add the colleagues I wish to provide access to this application or share this application with. Now, the really cool thing is, once I've built an application, I can then export that application as a JSON template literally through the portal. So you can see here, I click on this automation script button, this blade opens up, and in a couple of seconds, it's going through all of the components that make up my application. Maybe a little more than a couple of seconds. And here it is. This is literally the JSON template that I can use to redeploy this application over and over again and ensure it's identical. Now, one of the cool things we've added is the ability to save this into a library. So, for example, if I wanted to save this mobile app to a library, and this library sits within the Azure portal, so it's very easy for me to share this out with my colleagues, I could save this application, save the template, call it mobile app 1, my mobile app template, save this. And now I've actually got a new icon here called templates. And you can see here is my mobile app template. And what's even cooler is I can choose to share this with a colleague. Now, Jaron really loves development, so I'm going to share this out with him. I'm going to make him a contributor. And then I'm going to look him up. There he is. It's easy as doing that.
It's a bit of a looking version of me.
And that's pretty much it. So that's two demos I've shown you. The first one is provisioning an IaaS VM using PowerShell on Ubuntu. For all you Ubuntu or Linux fans or CentOS fans or even Macintosh users can deploy with PowerShell. And the second one is how to provision an application using our PaaS platform.
Cool. Over to you, mate. Good. Yeah, I think the, you know, for me, the big thing about PaaS is I don't think you really appreciate how quickly that whole thing deployed, right? That in one click, and we had a web app running on Azure. You know, one of the things, if you think about trying to do that on traditional infrastructure servers, you'd still be trying to build the VMs. And what actually happened on the back end there was it actually built two load balanced VMs with IaaS on it already to go deploy the application. And so it's already a highly available, scalable web application ready to go that all you do is manage your code on. So, you know, otherwise you'd still be waiting for the MFA thing to sort of start kicking over and trying to deploy a virtual machine. So you can see really quickly, just in that simple demo, the power of developing on PaaS services now, how quickly you can get things done, try things, tear it down, try again, without having to keep waiting for infrastructure to be built up for you. So the next phase talking to was around data and intelligence. You know, there's a big trend now, or term we're coining around data's new oil. You know, for organizations now, there's so much power and information and the data that's being collected by the organization. If only we could sort of get better insight into that data. And so it's a lot of the work that we've been doing today. So I'm just going to sort of talk through about how we sort of start to support business strategies with data, how we can start using predictive analytics around that, and some of the things we're doing around artificial intelligence. We were sort of just joking, though, through the keynote that we should have really checked with the keynote people before we put our content together because they've stolen all of our thunder. So if you want to know about the stuff, just refer back to what we heard in the keynote this morning, and that's pretty much everything. But just to sort of recap on some of the stuff we spoke about this morning was
There's a lot of different disparate data sources coming through today. You know, you've got traditional ERP, CRM type data coming through. We've got web data coming from search, from advertising, web calls, that sort of thing. And then we're starting to get sort of this big data, which is now I'm getting, you know, terabytes of information coming in from the myriad of sensors and devices that we may have in the market. There's social data that we're getting through, media and content, mobile. There's so much sort of information coming through, but it's all very much disparate. And the power to most organisations is how do we sort of get a better handle on that data to make better informed decisions. So a lot of sort of the work that we're doing now is basically taking all these disparate data sources and then providing it in a front end on any device that makes it really easy for a company to digest. The Power BI sort of things is just fantastic in terms of getting a really quick time to value for an organisation of how they start to basically analyse data that they may be getting in. Even for our Azure customers, there's a Power BI plugin that you can now do the same sort of reporting on for your Azure consumption, so I can start getting trends on where's my spend going, what services are being used more than others, and start getting some predictive analytics around spend and that sort of stuff, so I've got a better handle on what's going on. But, you know, literally, you name it, there's a content pack available now for Power BI to really start connecting up these disparate sources and bringing them together into Power BI and those sort of things to make it really easy for the business to connect on. But really, the power, I think, is how they better start doing forward thinking and predicting what we need to do next. And Azure Machine Learning, as we heard about this morning, is a fantastic tool that enables you to really simply take these disparate data sources, apply some intelligence to that data source, and then start doing trending out in terms of what that may be. So the demand forecasting one is amazing for people like in retail, with how much stock do I need to carry per store? What sort of items do I need to be stocking? Most of the time, we sort of look at in history as a way to look forward, but, you know, starting to use machine learning to predict what may happen. Even from a healthcare perspective, we've got healthcare organisations overseas starting to look at patient information and working out what are the likelihood of people needing to go to hospitals, so they've got better capacity planning that within the hospitals. But to make it really easy to get started, we've got these sort of machine learning templates that are available that make it really easy for you to start trying this thing out. The three main ones that we've sort of worked on so far are on demand forecasting, predictive maintenance, and vehicle telemetry. And these are based on real-world projects that we've been working on. So basically, you take this data up, put it into these template data, and then provide that information out the other side. So, you know, predictive maintenance is fantastic for machinery and that sort of stuff to know when does equipment need to be repaired as opposed to waiting till it fails before we fix it. And some of the things that we've been doing with the motor vehicle industry around getting vehicle telemetry off the cars to provide some insight of the performance of those cars as they're moving forward. But one organisation that we've been working with recently around the predictive maintenance stuff is with Rolls-Royce. So Rolls-Royce are one of the largest manufacturers of aircraft engines around the world. They sort of provide a lot of services to the airlines in terms of the management of those engines, and there's an awful amount of data that's collected off off one flight. I think there's something into terabytes of data that comes out. There's thousands of sensors on these engines. And what Rolls-Royce have worked out has gone, well, we've actually got a lot of information here that we could provide to the airlines in a better way, correlate that with other external factors, and provide a lot of intelligence back to our customers in terms of how they operate their flights better. So I've just got a quick video talk which I'll show you, which just takes you through how that whole solution's come together.
As an airline pilot, I know that to fly with the best, you need to work with the best. With over 13,000 engines in operation around the globe, Rolls-Royce provides the services to maintain them at peak performance. Today, each engine has thousands of sensors that can produce terabytes of data on long-haul flights. Making sense of all that data is critical in transporting my passengers safely and efficiently. Rolls-Royce uses Azure IoT Suite to analyze data remotely and deliver real-time, actionable insights to me and to the airlines about engine performance and operational efficiencies. Advanced analytics help us optimize fuel economy, anticipate maintenance needs, and avoid costly downtime and delays. A single unscheduled disruption and its knock-on effect to a fleet and the passengers can cost an airline up to $1 million a day. With early notice, our team can proactively have parts at the right place and time, reducing inventory costs and maximizing availability. Up to one-third of a plane's weight is fuel. As a pilot, I decide how much fuel my plane carries. Insights into engine efficiency, weather conditions, flight path, and scheduled landings impact my decision. Cortana Intelligence helps me choose the optimal fuel level to maximize efficiency. With 40% of our operating budget devoted to fuel, even a small percentage reduction can save us tens of millions of dollars each year. Microsoft and Rolls-Royce, reaching new heights in customer value.
So just a really great example of how Rolls-Royce is adopting the sort of machine learning capability to provide essentially engine management as a service for their customers as well. And there's a number of airlines now starting to take up the service because it means so much more to them now in terms of what they did before in terms of flight planning and that sort of stuff. And also minimise the amount of downtime those aircraft have where they get pulled out of service at last minute due to a part that's failed. And we've probably all experienced those sort of flights being delayed for mechanical reasons. Hopefully those sort of become a thing of the past as the airlines start to adopt these sort of technology in a better way. So last point is around sort of AI and artificial intelligence. And Tiago did a great demo this morning of some of the bot stuff that he's been working on since he's moved up to Seattle in recent times. Really great, easy ways that you can start to get a lot of value out of integrating bots and changing the way you sort of integrate and operate with your customers as well. So there's a lot of APIs, SDKs that we have available for you to basically start up and sort of using bot framework and that sort of thing. And we're starting to see these appear more and more now in sort of web applications that we're dealing with. And then obviously the cognitive services. You know, there's some really interesting stuff starting to come out of this as well, where we can start using speech and facial recognition APIs and that sort of stuff. This is one really interesting one, which is called What Dog Are You? It's in our visitor center in Seattle. And this is telling me that I'm a golden retriever. I don't think I look that bad, but never mind. Just real easy ways that you can start using all these cognitive services and that sort of stuff. But some examples of how customers have really taken a lot of this sort of technology and delivering better customer experience. A good example of that is McDonald's. So they work with one of our New Zealand partners called Plexia to do loyalty, and it's mobile-based loyalty. But what they're doing is very different to what I've seen a lot of organisations doing, and it's around personalisation. You know, today it's no longer about just getting sent a loyalty card and expecting to be loyal to that organisation. People want more from that, and we don't want to be carrying more cards in my wallet and that sort of thing. So the mobile app and personalisation is really the big thing about how we increase customer engagement. And so what they've been doing is basically taking a lot of this data of customer behaviour. So I know who I am, what things I buy when I typically go to McDonald's, but they're correlating that with weather information, perhaps GPS data off the phone, to basically be able to offer me targeted services. So it could be, well, it's a nice day today, so next time you come to McDonald's, here's a free ice cream, because we know it's a nice day, you're probably going to want an ice cream. But getting sort of more innovative about how I start doing upsell opportunities. And so what they've talked about is sort of understanding the commute patterns of their customers. And so they know that, you know, Jaron comes to McDonald's 3 days a week, he always buys lunch, but he never seems to buy a coffee from us. Yet the train that he gets off in Tokyo, he walks past him at cafe on the way to work. So why don't we target him with an offer for a free coffee? That offer would be different to the one that Diego got, for example. These are all really interesting and really easy things that they've been able to do by leveraging a lot of these disparate data sources, providing some intelligence over the top of that, and then providing the insights to the business to make better decisions about how they target their customers. So some really interesting stuff we're starting to see already lighting up about how people are leveraging a lot of these different data services and the power of Azure in the back end as well. So with that,
already
another demo time.
Fantastic. So to tie in with what Jaron was speaking about with regards to IoT, machine learning, predictive analytics, et cetera, wanted to show you a quick demonstration of how we bring all these Azure solution components together to provide a solution that provides real-time visualization of your telemetry, plus allows you to forecast future requirements. And in this particular scenario, we're looking at an energy on-demand forecasting solution, which takes real-time telemetry from a device, in this case it's the substation, and provides that information real-time into a dashboard, as well as take that information and forecast for future energy requirements to avoid things such as brownouts. So how does a solution like that come together? I've got a bit of an architectural diagram here. And if you look at Microsoft's blueprint in terms of how they look at IoT and data analytics and consuming the results, we have six pillars or six phases. We've got the source, which is the device that generates the data. We look at a mechanism for ingestion, which could be a cloud gateway or a device that pumps the data into a cloud. We have the prepare phase, which is all about normalizing that data. We have the analysis and publish phase, which is where machine learning comes in and big data comes in to transform that data. And then finally, we've got the consume phase, which is how we present that data to make intelligent decisions. And in this case, we have two paths. We have what we refer to as a hot path and a cold path. The hot path at the top takes the real-time telemetry and presents that in the dashboard so we can see what's happening at any given time on our grid, for example, in this case. And the bottom path is where we do all of the machine learning and try to predict what's going to happen in future in terms of energy consumption. So what does this look like in Azure? So the first thing, it's a very pretty dashboard, but I'm going to show you what this looks like in the back end. So here we go. So here's my energy forecasting application, and you can see how we break down all the individual components that make up this application. So you can see here we use technologies such as streaming analytics, we use SQL, we use Data Factory, we use Event Hubs. You can see there's multiple components that make up this solution. Once all of this stuff is processed, what we can do is we can tie in with Power BI to give us a dashboard that's not proprietary. So in other words, we can come up with the visualizations we want to see which are important to us. So I'll quickly walk you through this dashboard that I built from scratch. Effectively, I've got three pillars here. The first one is the telemetry pillar. And you can see here I'm being presented with real-time information. At the moment, this is blank. Don't know why. But it's showing us the current load on the grid as it happens in real time. I can also see here on the right-hand side the load per substation. So I get a good idea of how power is being consumed in any given area. The second tab is all around the insights. Again, it's providing that analytical view of how things are happening on the grid. Again, we've got our breakdown of power stations. I can see that, for example, in this case, this green tagged substation, which is Dannevirke in my case, is consuming most of the power. So I might look at planning additional power or substations in that area. The next thing on the right here, I see a quick visualization of the same thing in a donut. Now, the true power comes when I'm able to forecast what will my consumption look like tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, in a month's time. And you can see here we have a model running in the background that's able to predict what consumption will look like over the coming weeks and also compares it to what the actual trend is today and then provides me with an error rate. So you can see here from this diagram, I've got a map view. Wellington's consuming most of my power. It is a simulation, by the way. Sorry to break it to you. You can see the on-demand trend here in this dark line, and then you can see the forecast here in these other lines. I've got a green line here, which is showing my forecast wave. And machine learning has worked out that its accuracy is about 3.26 APE, and the lower the better, the more accurate the prediction is. So this is all good stuff, right? I can see at a glance how my grid is performing, what I need to watch out for in future. Now, if I wanted to create a widget, right, if I wanted to work out, for example, what's the average or what's the load been over the last hour, thanks to our natural language technology in the background, I could simply ask the question, what is the load from, let's say, last 1 hour? This is what it is. What is the load from the last 24 hours? I could take that, I could pin that to my dashboard, and if I head back over here, You can see there it is. I can simply drag this up and drop it under here. Look at that, done the same query, but you get the point. So even building visualizations, so I can say things such as, what is the load by substation name? And I can simply go over here and change the type of visualization, pin this, and away we go. So you can truly see how powerful Power BI is in order to visualize the telemetry you have in the background. And I guess the other thing I want to highlight is the non-proprietary nature of it. If you look at a lot of utility companies that subscribe to the likes of Pi and all these other guys that work in that industry, dashboards are usually proprietary, very expensive to customize. This is a good example how you can take that telemetry and visualize it the way you want. So with that, cool. Back over to you.
Thanks, mate. So openness and flexibility. So there's a few things that Diego sort of touched on earlier around some of the open source stuff, but this is sort of a big area of the investment that we've been making in the platform. So I'm just going to sort of talk through some of the things we're doing around open source today, some of the things we're doing around hybrid, because it is the future of computing moving forward at the moment, and some of the things we're doing around how we start to deploy the cloud on-prem as well. But, you know, really, the investments we've been making in supporting open source has been massive for Microsoft over the years. You know, when I did this talk probably 3 years ago, it was quite limited in terms of the number of open source solutions that we even offered on the platform back then. We're just sort of starting to get into supporting a few flavors of Penguin, and that was about it. You know, this whole thing's really changed significantly over the years as well. You know, we're now one of the largest contributors to GitHub, as an example. You know, things that you would never associate a Microsoft with before have become very, very real. So if full open source or LampStack is your flavor, then by all means, it's a great platform for you to be able to run that in a first-party experience. We don't sort of treat Linux and open-source workloads as a second-class cousin to our own stuff. We support this very openly as well. So regardless of what sort of development frameworks you want to use, that sort of stuff, we're all fully available. A lot of this is available in the marketplace that I spoke about earlier as well. So, you know, if there's that misconception that, you know, Microsoft's Azure is a great platform for Microsoft product, but really, you know, over a third of the infrastructure that runs on AWS today is actually open source workloads, so it really is a first-class citizen. But how we start to extend the on-prem world into the cloud is really where a lot of organisations that I talk to today are at. You know, it's not very much around public cloud's the answer, what's the question, and you need to be thinking about how quickly you can get to public cloud. But for most organisations, it's about how do we start to extend out what we're doing on-prem and start leveraging some of the benefits of public cloud. Some of those things are about sort of increasing application availability, perhaps, you know, increasing my storage footprint because I keep running out of storage on-prem all the time. I'm starting to use more SaaS applications, and what do we do about identity management and access management? And then how we start to run like full hybrid application scenarios as well. So a lot of the work that we're doing now, you're starting to see, you know, basically cousins appearing between the on-prem world and Azure. And applications on Azure that will then deploy back on-prem as well. So with Azure Backup, for example, it's a backup tool as a service in Azure that you can use, but you can also use it to back up your on-prem workloads as well. Azure Site Recovery is a fantastic tool around DR as a service. That is really hard to do today, really expensive for most organizations, and they don't often do it really well. Azure Site Recovery is basically a DR as a service offering. It can be used between managing DR between two on-prem sites, whether it be Hyper-V or VMware sites, between, say, an Auckland Wellington data center. You can run ASR to orchestrate that manner. You can use it between your on-prem and Azure, and that's probably where the biggest use case at the moment we're seeing is a lot of organizations don't have two data centers at their disposal anymore, or they're using a backup provider to sort of provide a quasi-DR solution for them. With ASR, you can basically provide DR as a service back into the Azure cloud as well, with a near-zero RPO, and be able to test that failover at any time, and then you're only paying for the compute when you actually boot up and test it, or when you actually do a failover. Or for those customers that do have production workloads running on Azure, to be able to use Azure Site Recovery to do orchestration and DR between two Azure regions, as ways that we can do that as well. So a very, very flexible tool. It's also what a lot of the customers are using when they're doing migrations to the cloud. So I'm going to take some on-prem workloads, move them up, and Azure Site Recovery is actually free for the first 30 days. So if you can get your migration for that workload done within 30 days, you don't actually pay for it. So great product there. Around data, SQL Server 2016, it has a concept of a stretch DB, stretch database. So now I can have a database replica managed in the Azure cloud as well. And StoreSimple, which has been a great product for us about how we manage tier two unstructured data, which is just growing at a phenomenal rate. People are storing more documents and never deleting them. StoreSimple is an on-prem SAN that's cloud connected, so your hot data stays local, but then your cold data can be moved to the cloud where it's 3 cents a gig and a lot cheaper than trying to manage it on-prem. Fully backed up, fully secured, fully encrypted. So a way that you can sort of move towards this world of bottomless storage. Things we're doing around Azure AD and its ability to synchronize with your on-prem AD. So as you start to use more cloud applications, identity and access management is becoming really, really important. And so Azure AD provides you that single sign-on capability to a myriad of different SaaS applications. I think there's about 2,500 different SaaS providers that we support today. Some of those are through full single sign-on, some of them sort of just password management. But it's a great tool that integrates with what you already have today without any significant changes required. Things we're doing around applications, Zap service and those sort of things, and then finally with operations management suite that I spoke about earlier, about how now I have workloads running in different environments, how do I get a handle over what's running where and what the state of those applications are. But the big trend we're seeing now is about how I get cloud-like services running in my own data center. So how many of you have heard of Azure Stack? Good part of you. So this product is basically as true to getting Azure in your own data center as you possibly can. It actually is the Azure code that will run in your own environment. So this is a very unique proposition that we're going to be able to have in the market because we sort of obviously work with on-prem workloads and provide data center management around that and also run the hyperscale cloud that is Azure. What we're actually working on at the moment is how we start to shrink that down into an environment you can deploy yourself. You know, there has been a bit of a delay in that product in terms of how we start to take it to market, and we've sort of changed the approach a little bit to have it more of an integrated system. Most of the challenges we've had is how we start to scale down Azure into a typical customer's environment. When you look at what we call a scale set in Azure, which is, you know, a block of services that we deploy, a stamp in Azure is 20 racks of infrastructure. But it's impractical for us to try and deliver 20 racks of infrastructure to a typical customer, say, here in New Zealand. Probably half a rack's probably good enough. So what we're doing at the moment is how we start to take that and condense it down into a footprint that's big enough for most customers to run on. But that will be the code of Azure. It will be the Azure Resource Manager. Everything you've seen with Diego's been demoing, you'll be able to do in your own environment. The portal will be exactly the same, no matter where you run your workload. So the opportunity is now to say, I'm going to use the public cloud for my development, but for regulatory reasons or whatever, I need to run those workloads local, you'll be able to do that. Same code base. It will update itself in the same rhythm that Azure does. So there'll be an update that's provided that will update the entire system for you to keep in cadence with the Azure updates as well. But as you can see on the slide, it's a completely uniform system. So it's no sort of second cousin. It is going to be the full thing. So this is pretty much the third iteration of this journey, and this is really where we've been trying to get to all the time. Windows Azure Pack was like the first example of that. But in breaking news, always a good slide. So Brady Butts is the principal program manager for Azure Stack. We've managed to get him down here from Ignite US off the back of his presentation up there. So if you're interested in Azure Stack and learning more about what it is, where it's going, where we're at today and all that sort of stuff, then Friday at 10:30 a.m. Brady's going to be doing a session here to tell you all about Azure Stack and where we're taking that product moving forward. So yes, as I said, if you've got any interest in this product, then make sure you get on to see Brady's session as well. So lastly, just talking about trust and protection. You know, as I said earlier, this is really important for us and it's important for our customers as well. As you start to trust your cloud provider with a lot of your critical applications, you know, you really need to be safe that provider's got your back in terms of how they're managing the platform so it doesn't expose you to any risks either. So there's a number of ways that we're sort of managing this. One is just basically how we manage the platform itself from a security perspective. There's a lot of investments, a lot of work that we put into making sure that Azure is a safe platform, that you're protected from any sort of attacks that are coming in. One of the ways that we do that is this concept of red teaming. So basically what we have is a red team, which are the bad guys, and a blue team, which are the good guys. And the red guys are constantly trying to attack Azure, and the blue guys are trying to stop them. But the blue team never know when an attack is generated by the red team or whether it's just a general attack in itself. But the red team have access to stuff that normal hackers wouldn't have. So they have understandings and ways around the platform that a traditional hacker would never know. So again, they're sort of armed with more than the general market, but the blue team's constantly trying to sort of block those holes and stop them from getting in. And then there's reviews done off the back of that and that sort of thing. So it's one of the ways that we're starting to manage that platform. But what we're seeing is, as a result of the amount of investments we make in security, is that most customer security posture of the applications actually increase as opposed to going from going to public cloud. So there used to be sort of a big objection, you know, a few years ago where cloud was sort of unsafe, it's unsecure, I've got no control over it, therefore I'm going to keep my stuff on-prem. But what we've seen is that's never actually played out. And most customers have done a security review post going to public cloud have actually found that their posture's increased because there's so much more that you get for being a customer that you can never ever afford to do on-prem. Even things like simple DMZs and that sort of stuff, where it's Fred's job to look after it, where you've got a multi-million dollar investment of security sitting behind that to protect it as well. But in all things, it's always a partnership. So there's stuff that we do on the back end to protect the platform, but then there's tools that we give to empower you to provide your own level of management and security over the top of that as well. And Azure Security Center is one of those tools that gives you real-time insight into the security posture of the applications that you've deployed. If you've got things on virtual machines, it will tell you if your patch, if your current patch status is adequate or not, are your antivirus up to date, all those sort of things, the things that you need to know. And then with one click, you can rectify those. So if you've got some servers in that haven't been patched, you can basically initiate that from the portal. If they don't have antivirus, you can get it to deploy antivirus over the top of it and clear those errors up. So Security Center is a fantastic tool to give you sort of really deep insight into the performance of your security posture on the platform. Coupled with that is our commitment around certifications. And what these are is basically it's showing the investments that we make to get third-party audited capability on what we can offer on the platform. So at the top end, we've got the global certifications that we have. And in most cases, we've been a first mover in the industry of bringing the industry along on a journey with us around certification. And the ISO 27018 was one of those where that's an ISO certification that basically says that the provider will only use the information stored for the purposes of providing services back to the customer. Okay, we won't use it for other purposes such as advertising. So that was one thing that we did really early on in the industry to really state our posture saying we're here to support our customers and that's it. We're not here for other reasons. Then we have sort of more industry-specific certifications we've got around government certifications, health certifications, financial institutions as well. And then at the bottom, we've got sort of more regional specific certifications that we've achieved or sign-offs that we've gotten. One of those was with the New Zealand government. So some work that I did with the team probably 3 years ago, I think now, around the GCIO and the 104 questions around moving to public cloud. We worked quite proactively with the GCIO to basically say, well, out of those 104 questions, there's a bunch of those related to the provider, and here's Microsoft's stance on that, so that our government customers could get quicker time to value of just moving forward to the certification process without having to repeat the same questions over and over and over. And then from a region perspective, this is just growing all the time. We're now up to 34 regions around the world. I think when I started working with the Azure platform, we had six. And that was 4 years ago now. So that we had two in America, two in Asia Pacific, and two in Europe. And now we fast forward 3 to 4 years later, and we've got 34 of these regions open and active at the moment. The most recent ones are gone with the UK, so we've got two data centres sitting inside the UK now. One of the other ones we opened up was in Germany, and those are kind of what we call sovereign clouds, where basically it's a Microsoft facility, but we have an intermediary that manages access to the information held within the data centre. And that was to satisfy the privacy requirements of the German government. So it's 34 active regions open at the moment. And these are what we call sort of hyperscale data centres. To give you an indication of what they look like, this is one of our facilities in Virginia in America. We're sort of really started to move to this modular data centre capability, which enables us to rapidly deploy out services as basically as quickly as we can pour the concrete. But this is one of our facilities, but to give you an idea of the growth plans on at the moment, this is the earthworks that's sitting behind it, and that's where we'll be expanding into at the moment. So certainly the platform's growing quite rapidly. It's a big challenge for the operations teams in terms of how they're starting to build out facilities to support our customers, but it's all really great stuff for us as well. But it sort of shows you sort of levels of investment that we're starting to go into, and I think it was 3 years ago at this talk, I sort of mentioned about there'll be consolidation at the top end of providers because there's not many organisations globally have the capital investment required to keep pace at this. And we've kind of seen that play out a little bit now, where really you've got ourselves, Google and AWS, where people like Rackspace and those have decided to become more niche and focus on specific site support, for example, and that sort of stuff. So we are starting to see that sort of consolidation start to happen, literally because of the investments required to keep this thing going. But you know, in terms of a lot of the sites we have around the world, we disclose where they are and we take customers through them. So one of our facilities in Quincy, which is about three hours east of Seattle, we've hosted a number of customers up there before, and it just sort of makes it a bit more real for customers when they can go and visit the environments and see the systems actually running. So what we sort of talked about this afternoon, was just sort of four key areas around how we start to accelerate application innovation, how we start to sort of get better data and intelligence out of our environments we're running today and the data we're collecting. Talked a bit quickly about the openness and flexibility of the platform and then what we're doing around privacy and trust. But as I said, there's some more relevant sessions that you may want to go and see that are sort of dive into specifics around a lot of stuff we've sort of brushed on today. So these are some of those sessions there. Alex Hague's doing a session on securing and encrypting your workloads in Azure, so Security Center and some of those capabilities, he's talking about that. Stu Fox and Rick Klaus are in this room after us, talking about what's going on with the infrastructure service capabilities of Azure. Daniel's doing a session on Azure Site Recovery and how you sort of get the most out of infrastructure as a service and your VMs and your compute. Ken's doing a session on Linux. Logan's doing a session on running SAP on Azure, we're seeing a lot of uptake now of customers starting to move, you know, tier one production workloads into the cloud. Rafaela's doing a session on OMS. Rick's back doing two sessions on Azure Scale Sets and Container Services. And then Trinidad's doing a session on Azure Backup. So yeah, with that, don't forget to evaluate your session. You're going to draw to win a Surface Pro 4 and Xbox One S. So I trust you enjoyed the session, bit of an overview on the platform, what we're up to today, and hope you really enjoy the rest of your week at Ignite. And with that, thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.